You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it every night about it. A real C's fan wouldn't want to live their life without it. Banner 18 in the making, we gotta make it. Best squad in the East and still we can't get complacent. Most winning franchise, so the history's ancient. You could tell them other guys to go and plan a vacation. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. The most in-depth coverage that you ever gonna hear. Well respected in the city like Russell's career. It's Raining Jays. Millie.
Welcome back. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. And I want to thank you all for making us part of your daily routine. We're here for you Monday through Friday. And the Boston Celtics are heading into Washington to play the Wizards in a game that is hilariously devoid of any sort of talent. I am John Corrales of the Raining Jays here momentarily by myself, but soon to be joined by Ben Standig of NBC Sports Washington. He covers the NBA and the NFL for NBC Sports Washington. He's going to give us a great insight into the Wizards and a little bit of perspective into the Celtics. Ben's my guy. He used to host the Locked On Wizards podcast, but he has since moved on. But he is a great reporter who covers the Wizards and covers the NFL for NBC Sports Boston. So we're going to get into that conversation in just a few minutes. Again, I'm John Corrales. You can follow me at RedsArmy_John on Twitter if you're new to the podcast. And of course, if you're new to the podcast and you're not a subscriber, you can get the Locked On Celtics podcast on the brand new podcast app Himalaya, as well as Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. And when you get in your car, you can tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Celtics. The first thing we want to get to before we get to Ben Standig is the hilarious injury report that had seven guys out. Kyrie Irving is out. Al Horford, Jason Tatum, Marcus Smart, Aaron Baines, Gordon Hayward, and Marcus Morris, all out, all out with various ailments. This is a TNT game, which, again, funny, very funny that TNT chose this game over the Miami final Dwayne Wade game. Like, an entire farewell season to Dwayne Wade, and they're not going to get this game? Whatever. So Boston, Daniel Tice is still questionable. Jaylen Brown is going to play, I think. Well, he has to because they need guys. Gershon Yabusele also listed as probable along with Jaylen Brown. So that means that Terry Rozier, Brad Wanamaker, Shemi Ojeleye, who else is in there? Robert Williams, they're going to have RJ Hunter, PJ Dozier. Like, all of those guys are going to get 35 minutes. This is going to be fun. Like, honestly, this, it's funny, but this is going to be the most fun game that the Celtics have played because it's just going to be 35 minutes of Robert Williams just going nuts, like just jumping every 3 seconds. Like, they're going to be coming out of a timeout and he'll just jump at half court for no reason. But the Celtics are playing in this game, but obviously this game means nothing. We talked in the last podcast about the focus on the Indiana Pacers and moving forward, which is why so many guys are not playing. I mean, honestly, this game just doesn't mean much. And it's going to be fun to see how Robert Williams gets to play. And I'm very interested to see how the Wizards play this. Like, do they play? Who do they play? Do they play Bradley Beal? I don't know. Like, I obviously would love to see more Bradley Beal. I'm a big fan of Bradley Beal. I think, and you'll hear this conversation that Ben and I have, that I feel like the future of the Washington Wizards hinges on them trading Bradley Beal for a package of players that will help them rebuild. And that helps Washington become a better team. Not that Boston Celtics fans want that, but it helps them. And it helps Bradley Beal maybe go to a win now team. And it's going to suck because I think he's going to go to the Lakers and that he should go to the Lakers. And I have personally, in my own just loving the NBA and basketball, wanted Bradley Beal to like do well, but he's going to the Lakers, and you know, what am I going to say? I don't want Bradley Beal to do that well with the Lakers. As much as I'm a professional and going to keep things professional, but you know, Celtics Lakers is still Celtics Lakers. I mean, I can't. That's never going to go away. I can cover them objectively, but I can say what I want, and, you know, whatever. We'll leave it at that. So there's not much to say about this game coming up, and we're going to spend the next few days covering the upcoming series with the Pacers. There's a lot to talk about with them, and I think depending on what this schedule is, maybe we'll adjust our podcast schedule. So I don't know. Maybe there's going to be a Wednesday or a Thursday once the schedule comes out that maybe we don't do a Wednesday or Thursday show or something like that, but we're going to do something after a Saturday night game or a Sunday night game or a Friday night game that we might not normally record. So we'll adjust our recording schedule to accommodate the playoffs while also giving us each, you know, a day off from recording because, you know, load management and all of that. So we're going to get to, we'll figure that out once the schedule is all set. When we come back, my conversation with Ben Standig, we had a nice long conversation, a little bit Wizards focus for part of it, a little bit Celtics focus for part of it. Interesting if you're following the entire NBA, and look, the Wizards are part of the Eastern Conference, and that impacts the Celtics. So even if you don't give a shit about what the Wizards are doing, what they do is still important because their success or failure impacts the Boston Celtics. So Ben Standig is one of the best out there. And we have a great conversation. So when we come back, you're going to definitely want to check that out. And of course, if you are not a regular subscriber, you can get this show every day if you subscribe to Locked On Celtics on the new Himalaya podcast app. It's just the type of app that you need in this ever-expanding podcast world. People are creating podcasts every day, and you need to know which ones to listen to. So Himalaya is going to help you with their curated feeds to get you the types of podcasts that you want to listen to that conform to your interests. So check that out. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On Celtics. All right, Ben, we're here. It's Celtics, it's Wizards, it's the last game of the season. First of all, can you believe that TNT chose this game over Dwayne Wade's potential last home game?
I couldn't understand it when it's one of those things, like, I looked at it when I saw, and like, I'm not easily surprised based on Twitter anymore because Twitter is so crazy, but then I saw the tweet and I was like, wait, what? Like, what am I missing here? What? I mean, and then the fact that it looks like, I mean, the Wizards haven't had anything to play for for real in some time. They're focused on ping pong balls, or at least we are focused on their ping pong balls. And now I see that the Celtics looks like they're going to bench like everybody from Kyrie Irving to Larry Bird. Like nobody's playing. So,
like I might not make it to the game. Like that's how bad it is. Seven guys are out. They will have if they activate, which I expect both two-way players, they'll have maybe nine guys available. So get ready for a lot of Robert Williams.
Oh, well, that would actually be interesting since a lot of Wizards fans are kind of had hoped that the Wizards would have drafted Robert Williams. So at least it'll be that fun, I guess.
Yeah. So, okay, so we're here, and a lot of Celtics fans, like Celtics and Washington had this kind of budding rivalry going, and the Wizards kind of have obviously tailed off a bit. Part of it is injuries. Part of it has been chemistry. For the Celtics fans who haven't been able to kind of keep up, I know the big news was that Ernie Grunfeld had gotten fired, and there was a loud roar of celebration from the nation's capital on that. But for Celtics fans now who are going to watch this game and say, wait a minute, what the hell happened to these guys? Can you kind of sum up where the Wizards are going into this offseason?
Oh, boy. it really is interesting.
In 30 seconds moment. Or less, go.
Yeah. Like when you go back to that game seven of that series and just how things have shifted. I mean, not only did Boston win the game and advance to the Eastern Conference Finals, but from that point for the Wizards, that last year they made the playoffs only as an 8 seed, won 43 games, but John Wall missed half the year with multiple injuries, including a knee injury. And there was like a weird vibe all year throughout the team. And when they started this season, that weirdness seemed to go up to another level, and they just were discombobulated throughout the start. I mean, I keep joking, but the first like 30 games of the year, I basically wanted to like poke my eyes out so I didn't have to watch what was happening. It was really just not fun to watch. And then John Wall suffers a season-ending heel injury. Later, things got worse. He ruptured his Achilles. He went from being just out for the season for out for 12 months. Because of that, their salary cap situation, which was already dicey, got even worse because of the fact that you now had essentially only five players under contract and were already over the salary cap. So they traded away Otto Porter, who was one of the sort of three building blocks they had going back to that playoff appearance against Boston. And literally now going into this offseason, the entire team on the roster is an injured John Wall, who at the earliest might come back in February, maybe. Jan Mahimi, who has 1 year left on that 4 year, $64 million contract. He played in the Wizards game Sunday at the Knicks. That was the first time he's played in several weeks. Troy Brown, their first round pick, who he's looked actually pretty reasonable lately, but Scott Brooks didn't play him almost most of the year for reasons that I'll just hold for my therapist. And then Bradley Beal, who obviously has turned into potentially an all-NBA guard. He's been fantastic all year, and he's the centerpiece now, but that's it. I mean, everything going forward is unclear, and now, like you said, there's a new GM search underway. Ernie Grunfeld, after 16 years, is gone. It means that everything I've ever thought about the Wizards, essentially since I've had this job, somewhat goes out the window because a new person's going to come in, and we have no idea the shape of how things are going to go. But what I know is, like I said, four guys under contract. Dwight Howard. Oh, by the way, I forgot. Dwight Howard has a player option. He only played nine games this season after having back surgery. So he could opt in for $5.6 million. So that could be another fun aspect. So yay, Wizards.
I'm sorry. There's so much with the Wizards, and the team that we're going to see is not going to be anywhere close to the team that we're going to see in the future. The first question I think that needs to be answered about Washington is, what does Ted Leonsis want? Does he want to hold on to Bradley Beal and build an immediate playoff contender? Or would he kind of take I always use Brooklyn as the example. Would he take the Prokhorov approach of huh, I pushed very hard for this thing and it didn't work at all. I'm going to learn my lesson. I'm going to step away. I'm going to give my new GM, Sean Marks, the key and say, you do what you need to do. We need to trade Bradley Beal. If that's what you say, then okay, fine. If you can get a great deal for him, do it. That I think when you're looking at the future of the Wizards, that's the first thing I would want to know is what's Leonce is pushing for.
Well, that's a great question. He, you know, as far as owners go, you know, he talks here and there, but he's talked twice. He talked twice in like the 48 hours after Grunfeld's dismissal. He talked once within a couple hours and once again the next day. And one message he repeated over and over within there was that he needs to take a step back and look at the situation and figure out effectively what went wrong. He basically described it as he and Ernie Grunfeld talked, and each season, the people always ask, how did Ernie Grunfeld keep his job? You know, the national perception of Ernie Grunfeld is probably of almost of buffoonery on some level based on how you hear things. I think it's been overstated, Grunfeld's incompetence, as it were. The Wizards, people forget, before he showed up in 2003, had missed the playoffs in 15 of 16 seasons. So while not to say that his 16 seasons in which they made the playoffs half the time have been great, they've actually had their most success since winning the title in 79 in the time with Grunfeld. So he, Leonce said that he and Grunfeld would speak, you know, before or after every season, essentially, to have a discussion about what the goals were. And this was the first time that those goals essentially were not met, out of like at a bare minimum making the playoffs for a team that started the year with the fourth highest payroll in the league. And so with all that said, the question is truly, like you're saying, what lessons does Ted Leonce take? Does he view it as, we want to stay in playoff contention? It is a business after all. You need to keep the season ticket holders happy. You need to, you know, ideally make the playoffs to get whatever playoff gate you can get. That's not nothing, and that's something to consider. But you're right. I mean, Bradley Beal has been fantastic this season. I'm not saying he could be the 1A player on a title contender, but he's somebody you want on your team. His focus, his leadership has been great. For most of the time they've been out without John Wall since like December 26th, the Wizards were just a tick under 500. They kind of fell off the last X amount of games that they sort of, you know, kind of saw where the season was going. But that's a tribute to Bradley Beal, I would say. And I don't know if you want to get rid of that guy, especially with so much uncertainty with John Wall. But next year is probably going to be not a great one for the Wizards unless they get lucky in the lottery or something else happens. And Bradley Beal has 2 years left in his contract. So I could definitely see a new GM saying, look, we love Bradley Beal, but like we can get a lot of stuff for him. He's peak value right now. And I wish I had a better answer for you, but I think that is a big question. Is Ted Leonce willing to sort of take the potential step back that would come with a trade for Bradley Beal for possibly two steps forward over the next, you know, few years versus I want to keep this guy and hope for the best going, you know, in the short term. I don't know what he wants to do, but you're right. I think that is a huge question as he goes into this GM search.
We're going to take a short break. Much more with Ben Standig when we come back here on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
Lakers really even have at this point? I mean, you're right. I mean, Brandon Ingram was looking a lot more interesting, but he's got this medical, the blood clot condition.
Yeah.
I don't know all the details, but it sounds like he'll be able to play on like what happened with Chris Bosh. But nonetheless, that's a concern. Lonzo Ball situation is, you know, feels like he's falling off. I still think he's an interesting player, but when you factor in his father and the fact that he just, you know, didn't really have a strong second season, I don't know where he's at. They traded away Zubac. Josh Hart's a DC kid, so you know that's interesting. But you know they do have a lottery pick of their own. But again, this is not considered a great year. I don't even know what they actually have for Bradley Beal. If they made the trade 3 months ago, I think all these things are more interesting. Now, I don't know if I like that package. And I'm wondering from your perspective, like you know in terms of the Celtics getting Anthony Davis, it just feels like now. I don't even know how anybody could say no. If I'm the Pelicans, what are you even debating at this point?
I tell you what, and I've said this before, and it sucks to be saying it, but this factors into it. The Ingram blood clot thing is scary. And if you are a GM putting a team together, like, you hope the kid's going to be okay, but can you risk this transcendental moment? Can you risk this pivot point in a franchise's history on a guy that it seems like he might be okay? Guys have had blood clots and been okay, but guys have also had blood clots and been forced to retire, like you said, Bosch. And if Ingram is the guy, he's the centerpiece of this trade. So it was before this injury, before this condition, do you value Ingram above Jason Tatum? And the people who said, yes, you value Ingram above Tatum, were the ones who were saying the Lakers are idiots. And the people who said, we value Tatum higher than Ingram, were the guys who said, well, you got to wait. So if the Pelicans are sitting there saying, well, we love Tatum or we love Ingram, whomever it is, but we're scared by the blood clot thing, so we can't make this trade, then Boston, in my opinion, becomes a little bit more they go into a little bit more advantageous position, because now instead of saying you get Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, they can say you get Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum. And I think Celtics fans would love an Anthony Davis trade that you piece together, but you kept one of those two guys, because they both have shown a ton of promise. And I think Tatum's ceiling is higher than Brown's, but Brown has shown that he can be really, really good, and maybe almost as good, but who knows? That just goes to say, like, that different people value different players differently. So if Boston can keep one of those two guys, that'd be amazing. So when it comes to a Davis trade, I think the Ingram situation is impactful in a lot of ways. So as it pertains to the Wizards, I don't know. It's the same question. Like, do the Lakers have enough? Do you feel like Ingram, his condition is going to be something that he can get past and still play versus whatever? I feel like they're going to be suitors either way. In for Davis or for Beal, if he becomes available, there are going to be teams, these dark horse teams. Like, what if Denver? I think Denver is going to be a very, very interesting team, because they have had a tremendous regular season, but then you watch them against the Golden State Warriors, and it's very obvious that the Denver Nuggets do not have that thing that the Warriors do, that a championship team does. And I think the Nuggets have exceeded some expectations, that Jokic has had such a tremendous impact, and he makes his teammates so much more better than people expected, that they're having like this great season. But I think the perception is that they're kind of higher than they should be, and they are a prime team that can consolidate some of that talent and make a play for an Anthony Davis, or make a play for a Bradley Beal. So I think the Celtics' chances at getting Davis are pretty good, but bringing it back to the Wizards, I think there are other suitors that, if they fall out of the Davis race, can make a run. Say, okay, fine, we can take a couple of these players and future picks or whatever, and maybe turn them into a Bradley Beal.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, speaking of Denver, like, I don't know to what degree, you know, you've been paying attention to the Wizards GM search, and why would you? But one of the, you know, it's very early, and Ted Leonsis has said he's going to hire a search firm, but that he wanted to have a lot of conversations with people in the organization to get a sense of what happened, and didn't want to come to any conclusions before these conversations. And then within literally like 5 hours of him saying this, came a report from The Athletic that the Wizards have made Tim Connelly their whole used to be with the Wizards some time ago. Right, I think he actually got there like the year before Grunfeld did, and he's from this area, and there's some sense that he might want to come back. I've heard at least a little bit of that as well. So that's an interesting sort of subplot to this whole thing, because I'm with you on Nuggets. They've got Jokic, and then they've got a lot of other guys who are either young and maybe you're going to get there one day, or are just good players, not great. And when you're talking competing for the highest of titles, you've got to have, as we know, 2 to 3, you know, all-stars or top 15 players or something, and they don't have that, and that's where I think they're going to become exposed a little bit in the preseason or in the postseason. But by the way, one other thing you said, you mentioned earlier about how that you look at the Nets situation compared to the Wizards, the Nets from a few years ago. I could not agree with you more. I've been saying to people, and I probably shouldn't say this out loud, but what the hell?
Sure.
Look, the Wizard season's about to end, and it's been a trying one for everybody involved, and we'll see what happens next year. There's, you never know how things go. But at this moment, it's really hard to view much hope from the Wizards. And I said, the only team I could sort of picture that had a sort of less hope on some level was that Nets team, because the Wizards, again, they only have 4 guys under contract, but don't have a lot of cap space to do much. And you have John Wall's injury, which, who knows, that Nets team, I've made that comparison myself, and it's also why, a guy, everybody wants somebody who used to be with the Spurs, right?
Right.
So a guy like Trajan Langdon, who's the assistant GM to Sean Marks, the former Spurs GM, Langdon was a scout there, the former Duke star, Trajan Langdon.
The Alaskan assassin.
Right. I mean, he is apparently in the mix for the Pelicans job. I've been told he's somebody that could be in play for the Wizards job. Again, there's apparently no list, so I don't know how to say that he's in the mix. But I thought he made a lot of sense almost just for that specific reason, that the Nets, you had to be super creative with the Nets, and I think that's the key for whoever the Wizards hire. You know, I'll let people decide if they think they need more of a salary cap guy or a player evaluator. They need somebody to be creative. This is not going to be a conventional situation because they have to work around John Wall's injury and contract and other factors. So, I do think that Nets situation is a good one to look at, and that's why sort of Langdon stuck out to me as the guy who would be, I always hate to just sort of pick the obvious number two GM from someplace, but the Nets, I think that one makes a lot of sense.
Makes total sense. I will say that a lot of people are looking at Mike Zarin from the Celtics.
That is, I should ask you about that.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Can I just say unequivocally, that's not going to happen. Like, that is not going to happen. This is a Boston guy. He's a Boston Celtics fan. He watches games with the old 80s starter jacket, like the satin kind of starter jacket. Like, he is a Boston guy through and through. Like, just let it be known that Zarin is, in my opinion, I haven't spoken to him about this, but in my opinion, seeing him around the Garden, he is as Celtics as it gets, and his dream is to take over when Danny Ainge says, I've had enough. And that, I believe, is going to be the succession plan in Boston. So once Ainge has decided it's time for me to go, Zarin will step in, and he will live his dream of running the Boston Celtics. And I absolutely would be shocked. There would be no more shocking thing in the NBA. And I'm saying this specifically because I know there's a lot of shocking things that would happen in the NBA. There would be no more shocking thing than Mike Zarin taking a job in another city, especially like Washington or another team in the East, maybe a team like if they put a new team in Seattle, maybe he would take something like that. But I think, honestly, that he's a Boston guy, and he will be he's waiting patiently and happily for Danny Ainge to do his thing, run his course, and ride off into the sunset.
If he's a Boston guy, does he sound like – this is just my movie's thinking. Does he sound more like a Kennedy or like a guy from like Southie?
He sounds like neither of those guys. He's just the – I don't know his entire history, to be honest with you, but I know that he watches the game. Like, he walks around and talks to people like an assistant GM does and in his suit, and then the game comes on and he puts on his Celtics starter jacket. And goes off and watches and, like, pumps his fist watching the Celtics games. Like, he is an avid Celtics fan. And then after the game, he returns to his role. Like, that's – I don't know. He just speaks normally. Like, he has no discernible accent as far as I know. But it's not like he's, a very obvious, yeah, I'm going to have it, like that guy. But no, he's definitely not. I just don't think he's going anywhere. Let me ask you this, because we've been talking from a Wizards perspective for so long. Give me your outside view, because you've got like a 30,000-foot view of the Celtics. You've seen Boston from afar, and I know you're busy covering and watching the Wizards, but I know you pay attention to the league. Do you buy into the possibility of Boston putting things together and being the dangerous team, even after all of this, being that dangerous team that nobody wants to play in the playoffs?
I do, because of the head coach. Ironically, I thought about Brad Stevens recently because this is a complete tangent, but the Kemba Walker came through DC recently, and they just had Sweet 16 and Elite Eight games of the NCAA tournament here in DC. And back in 2011, Kemba Walker, when they went with Kemba with Connecticut, they started their title run in DC. The other team that started their run to the finals there was Butler, and they were both there in DC. They both then met in the finals. And just thinking about it, as I was writing about Kemba Walker, it just got me back to Brad Stevens. I think legitimately in the last 20 years, I could make a case that the greatest achievement in sports is Brad Stevens taking Butler to back-to-back finals. That's like insane. I mean, for any team, it would be great if Coach K did that with Duke, let alone Butler. And so it just rekindled my belief that, like, Brad Stevens is, like, an amazing coach. And, you know, every time I'd watch him, watch you guys over the last few years, it just sort of blows my mind watching, especially, you know, OTAs and things like that. But obviously it's been a struggle for, you know, a variety of reasons that I'm sure you and your listeners know far more than I. I get most of my Celtics are sort of recapped when I listen to Bill Simmons talk about them all the time. So I don't know.
Oh, God, what are you doing?
So I don't know how much he's.
What is that about? Jeez.
Yeah, well, so I don't know how much he's over exaggerating, whatever.
You gotta change that habit quick.
Simmons is all right. But, you know, obviously, look, I mean, you guys are dealing with the Gordon Hayward situation, and it sounds like he just simply has not been close to the guy that everybody hoped he would be. Pre-injury, the one thing that's been interesting for me is watching the Kyrie Irving of it all, because when he was in Cleveland before LeBron, he was often compared to John Wall because they were number one picks in back-to-back years, and it was always this thing: who do you want? Which guy would you want? All the kind of stuff. And my take at that point was always: I think Kyrie Irving. I mean, and I think it's true now. He's the more spectacular one-on-one offensive player, but if he's the lead, I question where your team is going. It seems like he's not the world's best leader. But then LeBron showed up and things got better in Cleveland, and he took over as he was the number two guy, and we sort of have a different approach for Kyrie. And then he left LeBron, which I personally loved. I applauded Kyrie leaving LeBron at the altar, so to speak. Kind of saying no, I'm good with that. You trying to teach me all the time. And last year it seemed like he was on his best behavior. And you know, I remember when they were in D.C. earlier this year, I was there during a scrum, and he was talking about what it means to be a leader, that he's learned some things. And Stephen A. Smith was at one of these games, and Stephen A. Smith was saying it's no doubt that Kyrie has lapped Wall in many ways. But then it felt like since that point, it's been, at least from the headline, I gather, just nothing but a a frustrating situation with Kyrie sort of talking down to all his teammates to some degree, acting like he's above it all and they need to learn from him. And then it reminded me of where I was on Kyrie a few years ago. So this is my long-winded way of saying, if Brad Stevens can figure out how to get, if I'm right on this, Kyrie on the same page with his teammates, you guys certainly have enough talent.
Sure.
But the fact that it's been now 82 games and it hasn't happened leads me to the question. I would assume, what's the matchup right now? You guys against Indiana?
Yeah.
Right? But, yeah. But you guys have the home court?
Yes.
I mean, big props to Indiana for the year they've had, especially with that Oladipo. But, you know, it doesn't seem logical that Boston would lose that series. If they do, you know, oh, my Lord. But beyond that, you know, it's hard, I'd say, after 82 games to look at Boston and think that they could get this done. But if anybody could figure it out, I would say Brad Stevens is the guy. That would be my outside take.
Sure. I mean, like, I think part of the Kyrie thing, like, if certain circumstances were different, like if Anthony Davis wasn't in this situation, which means Clutch Sports wasn't trying to get him to Los Angeles, which means they weren't trying to cut down Boston as a destination, because everybody knows that Boston had the quote-unquote trump card in Jason Tatum, that they could make that move. That if they didn't have to cut down Kyrie and throw Kyrie into these, well, he might not be happy in Boston type rumors, if all of those things didn't happen, I personally believe that we wouldn't be in this exact situation. Now, that's just a guess. That's just my belief. I just see how things have gone, and that's how I think things would have played out. But a lot of, like, I was there at Madison Square Garden when Kyrie said, ask me July 1st, when Kyrie was as pissed off as he ever was. And my take was a little bit different than the national take, because I took Ask Me July 1st. It was in response to the question of, are you still committed to the Boston Celtics? And in the light of him being thrown into these rumors that said he's leaving, he wants to go play with KD, he wants to get out of Boston, he's reuniting with LeBron, all of these things, I saw that as, I'm still committed to Boston, and you, the guy who asked that question was a New York reporter, that he looked at the New York reporter, and when he was asked, are you still committed, his answer was, well, ask me July 1st. And I saw that as, I'm going to show you I'm still committed when I sign on July 1st, and I come back to you, New York reporter, and say, how you like me now? Like, that's my take. Now, I'm not saying that my take was necessarily right, but I feel like I have a solid footing for my take, having been there and seen how pissed off he was. Like, he was legitimately angry that he was included in a lot of these things. Like, I thought a lot of his anger was geared towards, why am I in, you know, I'm my own person. And I think nothing pisses Kyrie off more than people putting words in his mouth or people guessing what he's going to do. Like, he wants to, even if he is committed, like right now, like even in this moment, me saying, I'm reading this and saying that, well, I see this as you're committed to Boston. If he was right here listening to me, just because I said that, I feel like Kyrie would be like, well, I don't know. Am I? I don't know. Like, he would just to be contrarian, just so he can be in control of his own situation. And I understand that to a point. So it's hard to say from a Boston perspective how the Kyrie thing is going to go. And I just know that if Kyrie decides that, if Kyrie decides to just buy into everything, and I think he has recently, he's been when the Celtics played in Brooklyn and he didn't play and they had their problems and D'Angelo Russell again torched him in the third quarter, I can say that Kyrie was the first guy up off the bench and clapping and slapping five with everybody and encouraging guys, which is a far cry from that pre-Madison Square Garden, pre-trade deadline day, where he was the last guy out of the locker room, not even sitting on the bench, sitting off on the side, on the floor. Like, this was 180 degrees from that. So to your point, if Kyrie buys in and is like, okay, here we are, I'm leading this team and we're ready to make this run, I think this is as close as he's ever been to being that guy. The other thing that I think the Celtics are able to do in this run is play him, excuse me, him more, Al Horford more, Gordon Hayward more, playing Terry Rozier less, Marcus Morris less, and going with a 8-9 man rotation that does include Morris and Rozier, but to a much diminished degree, and focuses on the guys, the five guys who've been playing well and two or three guys who've been playing pretty well off the bench. I think Boston can make this run. I think they can certainly get past Indiana. I think they can certainly get past Milwaukee. I just don't trust Milwaukee. And then against Toronto in the conference finals, I think that's a toss-up. And coming into the season, you tell me if I'm wrong, Ben, but coming into the season, if we said conference finals, Toronto, Boston, toss-up, I think everybody kind of would have agreed that, yeah, Toronto, Boston, toss-up in the conference finals is where we would settle.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where things we're at for sure. The, I mean, you know, go back to with the Wizards. I mean, at that point, like the next year, I think it was when you guys started to get all these assets started to come in. You know, you drafted Tatum third, and you had already had Brown at that point, and you know the Hayward thing happened, and Kyrie happened, and I mean, you guys just have so many pieces that it's not that complicated. It's not that hard to look at the roster and say, well, there's clearly enough talent here. And obviously, you know, Milwaukee's dealing with they have Giannis, so that's a problem. But they've got other, you know, some of their other key pieces, you know, namely Malcolm Brogdon, are injured. And you know, if the Celtics can get going, then you know, Milwaukee at least, you know, we'll see if Brogdon's back at that point. But you know, he could be a little bit vulnerable. I mean, right? That would be the second round scenario, right? What, Milwaukee, Boston.
Yes. Yeah.
That's right. So there's that, and then you know, then like you would only have to. Yeah, I mean, it's right there. It's just a matter of why hasn't it worked all season? Why has it been up and down, and you know, not a steady. Not a steady course. And again, and then maybe this is the Bill Simmons influence, but the Jason Tatum of it all. I mean, I guess it seems like he's just not been the same. He hasn't, you know, not necessarily that he's been bad, but that he hasn't taken the next step in his evolution towards, you know, becoming the greatest player of all time.
That's another hours long conversation that I think Bill Simmons needs an education on, but that's okay. That's fine. We got plenty of time between now and the playoffs to have that conversation. But anyway, sorry, I interrupted.
No. I think when we get past the East, you know, first round, and again, you know, all respect to the Pacers, but assuming it's going to be Toronto, Boston, Milwaukee, Philly, I mean, I think it's going to be a pretty compelling situation because you know, you can make an easy case, I think, for any of those teams to win, and that'll be so interesting because we've had, obviously, we've lived in the Eastern Conference for so many years now where basically it was LeBron, whatever team LeBron was on, and everybody else, you know, just sort of good luck. And whether that was psychological or whether that was just based on pure talent, that's where we're at now. Whatever's going to happen, it is a big unknown, and that makes it a lot of fun. I mean, that's what sports is all about. But I think this time in particular, almost any of those teams, if you wanted to tell me one of those four teams gets out of the East, sure, I wouldn't think that would be a crazy idea.
All right, Ben, we've gone for a long time here, and I'm going to wrap it up. But I just want to thank you. People, listen to go check out Ben's stuff. I say listen to Ben like you've got a – do you have a new podcast or no?
This is the sadness of my life. I do not have a podcast right now. I'm very distressed.
Formerly of Locked On Wizards, but
– yes. I mean, feel free to tweet at NBC Sports NBCS Wizards. And tell them I should be on the podcast
Ben
or have a podcast.
Needs a podcast. Ben, you need a podcast, my man. Yeah, check out Ben. Ben is covering the Wizards for NBC Sports Washington. He's also covering football for them as well. So if you are an NFL fan, certainly check him out for that. But also, just we need a podcast. We need the podcast.
You know how, like, sometimes, like, you know, if you've been away from your family for a while, just getting a hug makes everybody feel better. Like, that's whenever I go on a podcast, it feels like I'm getting a hug because, like, I miss it so much. So I appreciate the opportunity to talk silliness about these teams that we cover.
I mean, are you going to be at the game? I can give you an actual hug if you want.
I will be at the game. The Wizards. It's their last game. Is it Boston's?
Yeah, it's Boston's last game. Yeah, I'm gonna give you a hug. We're gonna hug it out. We're gonna hug it out. I think we have to at this point.
I appreciate it. That considering the scenario that neither team has got much going on, it will be probably the highlight of the evening. So I appreciate it.
Ben, you're great. Everybody, check out Ben. It's at Ben Standig, no N. Make sure Ben Standig. So check him out on Twitter. He's the guy to go to for Washington sports. Thanks, man. Really appreciate it.
John, always. Thanks, man.
Ben's my guy, so make sure you go check him out at NBC Sports Washington. And we want to thank you for listening. A lot more coming up all this week. Playoffs are next. After this game, it's playoff time. And we're going to have a lot for you on the Locked On Celtics podcast. So thank you for listening. And remember, you can subscribe to this show on the new Himalaya podcast app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, whatever the hell your podcast app is called. Go ahead and search for Locked On Celtics. It is there. But I would recommend downloading the new Himalaya podcast app because that will help you out immensely. Do that. And of course, you regular listeners, five-star rating, good review, written review helps us out a lot. And remember to share the podcast. Tell everybody, listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King.